Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the podcast. The New Orleans Pelicans are now 0-1 in their first round series with the Golden State Warriors, surprising exactly nobody. So I guess, really, I'm just going to come right out and say with it, Michael, did they make that game interesting because they were figuring stuff out? Or because Golden State kind of said, hey, we're far enough ahead and let up?
I think the best way I could answer it is I think the Pelicans will play better in this series moving forward, but I also think Golden State will, or at least play more like the team we saw in the first three quarters. So, you know, I see a lot of people saying, well, we won the second half, or we even won the last three quarters. That gives us, you know, momentum going into game two. I could also turn around and say that Steph Curry didn't have it going from deep. They uncharacteristically missed some free throws, you know, things like that. So I think that the difference between these two teams is more indicative of what happened in the first couple quarters than the last 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways, other than Anthony Davis going down with some sort of injury, and I think you've kind of intimated this in the past when we were having conversations about the relative value of players on this team. To me, having Tyreke Evans go down with an injury that early in the game, that's probably the worst thing that could happen to this Pelicans offense other than Davis being injured. That's at least my take. Like, Evans, what he does, Cole tries, but he can't quite do it. Drew isn't right, really there. Evans is the best at cracking defenses and making teams start scrambling from all of our perimeter players. Do you disagree with that? Do you think Holiday can do it? Do you think Cole can do it? Or are you as worried as I am about Evans being out?
I think he could do it in a vacuum against most teams. I think Golden State is one of the worst possible matchups for him. And I don't know if we're a better team with Tyreke Evans than without, against Golden State, specifically when Bogut is on the court. When they go smaller, I think Tyreke could be a wrecking ball and could be fantastic, but I don't know. I mean, he was minus 12. He couldn't get anything going in that first quarter. before he got started. And the one thing that we always see is the common denominator against, you know, with teams that Tyreek struggles against is they have that rim protection. You know, they were going under on him when he would finally get into the lane. He couldn't finish. I think at best when Bogut's on the court, he could get into the lane, drive and kick, but he wasn't even able to do that much. I don't think Tyreek Evans is a big difference maker in this series if Bogut's on the court, but I'm sad for the guy that he finally gets into the playoffs after all these years. And of course he goes down with an injury 12 minutes, you know, into his postseason career. So I don't know how much he helps in this series, but I want him back simply because he's earned it with how much he's toughed it out this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It just feels like Tyreek Evans has moments and he slowly starts figuring it out. Usually they're going to make it really hard on him because, you know, Golden State has a very smart defense, but if they could just counter and get him into situations where they're not running pick and rolls, that's like the one thing I've always seen that they're able to do is when they have a really good defender like Bogut, who's really good at fading back from the pick, staying in front of Tyreek, so Tyreek can't really get anything rolling to the basket and gets blocked. What they start doing is rolling more of ISOs out for him, but they're short ISOs. He's not way out on the perimeter. He's kind of in the mid-post areas, and he turn faces up and drives. They can do counters like that, and he tends to start becoming a little more effective again. It's just I think he has to be there because, unfortunately, we need Gordon shooting, but if he's out there with another guard like Cole or Evans, frequently it falls to him to be the secondary penetrator, where if you have him with Evans and Holiday or Cole, Evans is better at being the secondary penetrator off those guys as well. Because Gordon, I just cringe every time he dribbles more than once. Like it is the worst possible thing for me when Gordon starts driving. Do you feel the same at this point?
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst thing with Tyreek going down and Drew being on limited minutes is that now Gordon has to have the bigger role. And you've talked about this in the past. The numbers bear it out. When Eric Gordon has to dribble the ball two or more times, he is one of the worst guards in the entire league.
Yep.
Purely statistically, I mean, his shooting goes down from, you know, at the three-point line. He goes from a guy who shoots about 46% with zero or one dribbles, plummets all the way down to 22%, 33% overall, and then the turnovers come, you know, which we saw in this game as well. So, yeah, giving him more responsibility is something that, you know, he's a different player at this point. I see people always pull up the Clippers highlights and they wish that Eric Gordon could return, but that guy has nothing but the same name. It's not even close to the same player anymore, and he's fine in this role as a spot-up guy, but when Tyreek and Drew can't play, you're asking him to do more, and that's just going to lead to trouble.
All right. So let's shift to one of the bright points in this game because, I mean, I'm feeling more and more happy with him as one of our potential wings, major rotation wings going forward. Quincy Bondexter puts together a 20-point, 9-rebound, 6-assist, 2-steal, 0-turnover line. I mean, and in a lot of ways, he was the best player the Pelicans had at points in this game. Like, he was all energy, attacking, making smart plays, never taking any moments off. Like, he was working like a dog. Like, if we had Quincy Pondexter as our starting small forward next year, do you see any reason to upgrade him at this point?
No, I think you said it best a couple of weeks ago. Ideally, you'd like to have two Quincy Pondexters who do something a little different. And, you know, based on the matchup, this guy could get 28 minutes this night and the other guy gets, you know, 20 or flip-flop, vice versa. But no, ideally you'd like to get another one. And, you know, it's both exciting that, yeah, I mean, if you take away Anthony Davis's fourth quarter,
Pondexter is the best player in this game for the Pelicans by a mile. And that's both somewhat exciting, and, you know, I tweeted afterwards, 20 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, all for the low price of an Austin Rivers. And that's, I mean, that's awesome. And we have Pondexter under contract for, you know, a little over $3 million the next couple of years, and the way that the cap is going, that's going to be like 1/30th of the cap, which is absolutely insane. But it's also frustrating that we got a guy who were paying $15 million, two guys who were paying $15 million technically, another guy we're paying 11, another guy that we're paying, you know, close to $9 million, and in this game, our best player, our second best player, is just a fringe X factor guy, and you know, we get almost no show performances from, you know, the guys who combined are making over $50 million this year in Gordon, Ashik, Evans, Holiday, and Anderson. So, you know,
I think that's a little hard on Gordon. Like, I mean, he was in positions where he shouldn't have been, and trying to do a little too much, but I felt like he did what he needed to do in places. But you're right, some of those other guys, like, pretty bad.
I mean, I understand. I'm just saying Gordon's getting paid more money than Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. I mean, for what
that's
he's
true.
So I mean, it's both exciting, and then you're also wishing that the guys who got paid 5 times what Pondexter's getting paid would show up. So it was a good thing, but I mean, it's really hard to leave this game. The thing that, you know, was just on my mind watching the game and afterwards is, what do you do with Omer Asik? Because, you know, he had a great stretch in the second half of the game that the Pelicans beat the Warriors just about 2 weeks ago. Other than that, this has just been an abysmal matchup for Asik, and we saw it again in this game. I mean, over the course of the season, when Asik was on the floor, the Pelicans were a negative 25.2 per 48 minutes. I mean, it's just an absolutely horrible matchup. He, on offense, Golden State basically just dares Asik to do anything against them and clogs the lane up, killing, you know, stuff for everybody else. And then on the other end, you know, he's just, they put him in space, and he's too slow-footed to take away the guards, and he doesn't have enough lateral quickness to be a help defender or even back up like we saw on that boat on the Bogut alley-oops. I mean, it's just, I don't think there is a worse matchup in the NBA than Golden State for Asik, and I just don't know what you do moving forward. What would you do after seeing Golden State absolutely exploit Asik on both ends?
Well, with Tyreke Evans, it makes it a lot harder. I would go small from the very beginning. I would open the game with Davis at center and Asik on the bench, with Dante Cunningham or Ryan Anderson as a starting power forward. And I think you just have to be that flexible. If we're thinking, like, I know Monty won't do that. And that is maybe my biggest knock on Monty is he might do it by game 3 or 4, but it might be too late at that point. But let's just say we take Rick Carlisle or even like Don Nelson or just any of those kinds of coaches, and you put them in on this team and you see what's happening here. Do you have any question that those guys wouldn't start the game that way? Or at least maybe Asik plays like 6 minutes. If he starts.
I don't know, because like the series that I keep going back to that this reminds me of is Tiago Splitter against Miami in the finals 2 years ago. I mean, remember how horrible he looked?
Yeah.
And Popovich stuck with him for 3 games. For the first 3 games, he averaged about 24 points. By games 4 through 7, he was down to about, you know, 7-8 minutes a game. And it took Popovich a little while, and it's hard to do. And, you know, our own Mason Ginsburg brought up a solid point today on Twitter. What was the thing that frazzled that relationship between Asik and Houston? Was Asik having, you know, to go to the bench? And, you know, that I think that might be a little too simple. You know, I think Ashiq is a intelligent human being, and he might see himself that it's a bad matchup and not take it personally and put team before his own ego. But it is a delicate situation, and it's something where, like I said, the second half of the game in New Orleans, Pelicans go into halftime down 12. Ashiq in the first 3 minutes of that second half, 6 points, 4 rebounds, and picks up 2 fouls on Bogut. Completely changes the game, and after those 3 minutes, the Pelicans are within 2. They obviously went on to win. So, you know, there is a chance that with some adjustments, which is what the playoffs are all about, that with some adjustments, you know, he can serve a purpose. But, you know, if I'm Monty, I do agree. I do think he will start up the game with Ashiq, but I think he's got to be a little quicker to pull him if we see some of the same stuff as we saw in game one.
Yeah. And our own Grayson posted the very, very nice thing. If you guys haven't seen it, come to the blog, take a look at the post James Grayson put out there. It's really good. It has a whole bunch of different clips and pieces as the game wears on. The one thing I'm a little questionable about that piece is he makes it feel kind of black and white that in the first half that Omer Ashiq was just basically clogging up the middle. The team wasn't moving very much, and that's what made Davis not able to go off in the first half. And in the second half, that the team was moving more, that Ryan Anderson was providing spacing. Do you think it's really that simple, that it was really just the team had the right personnel on and that was making Davis's life easier? Or do you think there was a little more to it than that?
I mean, I think there's a little more to it, but not much. I mean, if you watch on those clips that he posted, and I went back and watched the game again, almost every time Ryan Anderson is moving and whoever is covering him is right on his hip. Sometimes it was Barnes, sometimes it was Green. And if you remember, AD was really having problems not with getting around the guy in front of him necessarily, but as soon as he put the ball on the ground, there were 2 or 3 Warriors right there, you know, to slap it out of his hands or slap his hands, either way. I just think that, you know, it's a huge, huge part of it. But, yeah, I think there's more. I think getting AD on the move, I think just in general the ball and guys being on the move, you know, helped in that second half. But I don't think you could duplicate a lot of those things with Ashiq on the floor. So, yeah, I do think a big part of it was having him off. I mean, did you see something else?
I actually feel that while Ryan Anderson was definitely helpful, and you're right, they do stick to him, and I'll say something a little bit about that later. Honestly, just having Norris Cole on the floor, I thought made the world of difference. And it wasn't because Norris Cole was amazing and was hitting every shot he was taking, that he was like some sort of offensive dynamo. But how many times can you remember any of our guards other than Norris Cole doing the drive through the paint, come out the other side, circle around, making the offense kind of move with him, making the defense keep shifting? Like, Cole's the only one who does it. Evans never does that. Gordon definitely can't even dribble that far. Drew Holiday prefers to do his kind of hesitation penetration where he gets kind of in the middle range and then either takes a jumper or kind of kicks it out. Like, having Cole there where he just forced the issue, drove under the basket over and over again, and just made them keep being aware that I need to shift, I need to cover him as he crosses and make the Golden State Warriors, I think that was actually the biggest difference in this game as for freeing up Davis and allowing him to be able to move.
So let me ask you this. Somehow the Pelicans get into overtime tomorrow. 5 minutes. Teams typically just go with, you know, one unit down the stretch. Golden State puts out their starters. Who do you put out for the New Orleans Pelicans?
Cole, Holiday, Pondexter, Davis, and Anderson.
Even if Tyreek, I'm sorry, I should.
Even if
Tyreek's healthy.
Well, it depends on what Tyreek manages to do during the game.
Okay.
I think Evans has a chance to be able to do that kind of cause that kind of havoc too.
So who would you replace? You put him in if Evans is having a good game. Who do you put him in for? Cole, Holiday, or Coupon?
Probably Holiday.
Okay.
Right now, I'm probably taking Holiday out. So like, and here's like. I said this once before, like Holiday, I feel his offense is still a C. I don't think he's an amazing offensive player. He's heads up. He's a more natural passer than anybody we got. He can hit the three, but his probe is exactly what I described it before. He doesn't force things to happen. He kind of dribbles halfway in, sees what happens, and then takes a shot or passes it out. But he's not forcing defenses to do much more than suck in a little bit as he moves in and then wait to see what he does. And the result isn't always the best thing in the world. At least that's my take on Holiday. So I would probably not have Holiday out there. And his defense, I don't think he's physically up to the full defense of Drew Holiday we saw early in the season where, you know, he could battle Westbrook like a fiend out there. I don't think he's there quite yet.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest takeaways on Holiday is on the defensive end. I remember on one rotation, he gets in front of somebody. I can't remember who it was. It wasn't Curry. I want to say it was maybe Barnes or I don't remember. But basically, he gets in front of the guy, and then the guy just drove right by him like he was a statue. And I hadn't seen that with Holiday before. I mean, he seems good when it's a half-court possession and he could get, you know, physical and get right up in a guy. But, you know, I do not think he's the same defender. I think what he is I think he's a steady force on both ends, a guy who's not going to make mistakes. I loved some of the passes he made, especially in transition. But,
yep.
Yeah, I think he's still a ways away from the guy that we saw, you know, prior to his injury. And I think he'll be back to that guy. I just think it's going to take an off season to get him there.
Yeah. You mentioned Anderson and how guys just stay on his hip and follow him. And it's true. Like you have him cut through the paint and not only is his own guy just sticking to him like glue and not going to help off. But even like the other guys track him a little bit and make sure that he's being picked up. So he does have, on ESPN, they released this whole thing about gravity and what players are out there like Kyle Korver, like draw defenders away from everybody else and which ones are respected and disrespected and so on. How, you know, Curry has a really high rating. Anderson has a pretty high rating. But Curry, I will say this, I think there was three different times in the game where the announcers called out the Pelicans defense as awful. Like they're like, oh, they need to play some defense. Like that was terrible. I can't believe they had that letdown. If you go pay attention, watch those three, all three of them happen the exact same way. Steph Curry runs up behind one of the Pelicans wings or bigs, puts both forearms right into their back, sets a full contact, hard back pick on them. And the guy who they're picking on, his guy immediately bolts to the basket and either receives the pass and scores or just takes it with himself and scores. And what happens is the defense, the guy who's being picked can't get moving because Curry's actually setting some really nice picks. But Curry's guy, who's now his job is to stop whoever's driving past them to get to the basket, does not want to leave Curry at all. You could tell they have like 100% instructions. You stay on Curry like glue. Do not leave him ever. And it leaves these wide open layups over and over again. And I mean, it's just, I don't know what you even say in that situation. I mean, you got to say, hey, guy who's guarding Curry, I guess in these situations, you jump off of him and communicate. But Curry, just because of how good of a shooter he is, he is so impactful in so many ways out there, and I love how he sets those picks. Like, Gordon will set picks, but he does not set him like Curry even does. And Curry weighs like what, maybe 110 pounds?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like if you had John Stockton, but he had the quickest release and he was the best shooter of all time. Like, because that's exactly what they're doing, and it's just not fair. The other one that I hate is how we ball deny and they clear the court and the guy just runs the simplest, you know, little back door for a layup. Like, I felt so bad for Dante Cunningham on the one play where he was ball denying Steph Curry, and he must not have known that every other Pelican was on the other side of the court. And they just did the simplest little backdoor play for a wide open layup. But I mean, sometimes it's just a skill thing. And you know, they have one of the most dynamic offenses and, you know, guys who could do things that just space the court that make you pick your poison. And then they're not too bad on the other end. And I think what really got the Pelicans into trouble, and it's the simplest thing in the world, but it has to be the case for this series. The only way the Pelicans are going to play good defense is if they play good offense. The only chance they have is getting this team in a half-court game, because they have so many cross matches that, I mean, that's where they really got into trouble, is they would miss a shot, and then they're all trying to find their guy because they're cross-matched up. Golden State would, you know, go on a run. I mean, the Pelicans led 4-0 at the beginning of this game. Their offense looked fine, and then they had a couple of misses, and like that, Golden State goes on a 10-0 run. And it's just, it's hard. We could sit here and talk about how the Pelicans could play defense on Golden State, but honestly, their best chance is having Golden State taking the ball out of the nets on the other end.
All right, so did you see anything in that game that you felt was a clear exploitable advantage the Pelicans could take advantage of?
I mean, Anthony Davis on the floor being defended by either Andrew Bogut or forcing Bogut not to be on the floor because you went small. I mean, my big takeaway from this first game is if people didn't already know it already, the Pelicans are not winning this series. For me, what the goal should be is for Anthony Davis to have a transcendent series in a loss. If you're going to go down anyway, I want to see what happened in the fourth quarter, you know, just to get Davis the recognition, you know, to get other potential free agents excited about possibly playing with him, to get his own excitement up and juice going into the off season and make him hungry as ever. I mean, I don't see a way the Pelicans win this series, so that becomes my primary focus, is just letting him beast. And the way he does that is as many minutes on the floor without a Sheik as possible. I mean, what about you? You're still trying to win this series. What would your game plan be?
Just go small as long as possible, and even maybe try some Luke Babbitt out there. And I mean, I don't want Ajinsa. Like, it's really hard because Ajinsa came in and he actually had a really nice stretch. But I just don't see that being able to be sustained for that long. And it's almost like you want to go big when their subs are on the floor, and you want to go small when their starters are on the floor. And that's kind of like what I'd like to see.
Exactly. Like, I would even go a Sheik and a Ajinsa when their reserves are on the floor. That was my exact solution as well.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, it's just basically, as soon as Bogut goes, they don't really have any really capable big men who are going to fight you on the boards. So, yeah, I mean, run your advantage at them. Make them fight you, and even if you've taken bad shots because maybe your offense is clogged, you're going to get the rebound and put it back. So, I don't know. I think that's the only possible way you can use Ajinsa, is if it's only against their subs. I don't know. I don't really have much else. Like, I really liked at one point they were baiting Harrison Barnes into some post-ups, and those generally turned out fairly well for the Pelicans. But I don't think that the Warriors are stupid enough to do that all the time. Like Curry and Thompson, they're going to be out there and they're going to be getting theirs, and they're typically playing when Barnes is playing. So they're not going to fall into the, hey, we need to post Barnes up 14 times because he's being guarded by Eric Gordon. And I was kind of hoping that might be the case, but they're a pretty smart team, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, I mean, every single thing that you and I know, they know that times 10. If they know that Eric Gordon cannot make a shot putting the ball on the floor two times or more, that's drilled into all of their player heads and, you know, mm-hmm. their defense is centered around that. So, you know, this is what the playoffs are all about, especially your first time in. There's no better way to find out the weaknesses of your team than to go against the best team in the league and see what they lean on, what they try to exploit, and what they try to take away. I mean, I think that this is a perfect scouting opportunity for Dell and, you know, for our team as well, as far as, you know, what this team is and what this team still needs to do. I find it interesting you talk about Babbitt. So with Babbitt, are you thinking about, you know, if Ryan Anderson isn't hitting, having Babbitt replace him, having Babbitt taking some Cunningham minutes, having, you know, multiple guys, maybe having Babbitt and Ryan Anderson on the floor with Anthony Davis? What, you know, if I were to tell you I want to get Babbitt 12 minutes in game two, where do you insert him?
I would be pulling minutes from Cunningham and probably a little bit from Ashiq. At this point, unless Ashiq's having like a major impact and maybe somehow figuring out a way to limit Bogut out there, which is really, I mean, it's almost impossible for him to keep Bogut interested in him, which we've all seen for all season long. Like, they pass the ball to Ashiq, he's not going to really do that much with it. But so, you know, if you can reduce Ashiq's minutes to like 18, 17, somewhere around there, and then get some minutes for Babbitt to operate as a stretch four. If Anderson's actually hitting all of his shots for once, then yeah, keep Anderson. But I think Babbitt, we need a guy who's actually reliable. And I think that right now they would consider Babbitt the lesser of all some of the evils that we have in that situation. And they might even let him get free a couple times and then maybe you take him out again. I don't know. Wishful thinking, I guess is what I say. Cunningham, like he still burns me with the fact that he takes those long range jumpers when they're not threes. And while he had a nice stretch where he was grabbing every single rebound, it felt like that was available. I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing that he's going to be that impactful offensively for you.
Yeah, I agree. It's just at a point, you know, at a point we could keep trying to put all this offense on the floor, but at a point there's going to be a bunch of guys who can't defend anything and you can't hide them all. I mean, you put Babbitt and Ryan Anderson on the floor, then what, they're guarding Iguodala and Draymond Green? Like, that's going to end horribly. So it's this delicate balance, but again, like I said, I don't think that the horses are there. I don't think any master manipulator. I don't think, you know, if Red Auerbach was the coach with Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich as his assistants, I don't think you could find a way to beat this team in a 7-game series with what you have at your disposal. But I want to see Anthony Davis dominate, so I'm fine losing 124 to 116 as opposed to losing, you know, 102 to 94 in a game where AD, you know, struggles like we saw in the first couple quarters. So, I guess you're just going to have to play with that poison and hope that your crowd carries you to a couple of wins in New Orleans.
Yep. All right. You got anything else you want to check about, or are we going to call it an end there? And we'll be back after we've decided, in case you haven't noticed, we're just going to do a podcast after every game at some point. So,
well, I need a score prediction from game two, and I need you So we see in pretty much every game, Anthony Davis will have 2 to 3 good supporting Pelicans and 2 to 3 who don't show up. So that's it. Give me a score prediction and give me your supporters who show and your supporters who don't.
All right. So my score prediction is going to be 109-101 Golden State. I think since Norris Cole had an off shooting night, he is the wild swing shooter. So he will have a good shooting and scoring night in the upcoming game. And that Ryan Anderson will finally hit a few shots other than one. He'll get a 14-point game out of him at least.
All right, yeah, I got 116-112 Golden State, and I think Pondexter shows up again. I think this is a Ryan Anderson game as well, and I think that he's forced to press a little too much, and Eric Gordon struggles in this game.
Okay. All right, so thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and like I said, we'll be back after the next game to talk about the surprise win.